Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A nationally known travel expert worries those in the legislature who want to rein in the state's tourism promotion arm may be making a big mistake.
They paralyze Visit Florida and they put them in really handcuffs. So that Visit Florida won't be able to do their job effectively and won't be able to do their job well.
Also tonight, opposition is building against a natural gas pipeline across North Florida, especially from some of those living nearby.
Well, if it blows up, you don't have anything to worry about because you're gone.
We'll also get an update from our Capitol Report correspondents and hear about a measure that would require Florida law enforcers be trained to recognize autism. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's St. Patrick's Day and the end of week two in the Florida 2017 lawmaking session. This is Capitol Report. Back in the 1960s, tourism surpassed agriculture as Florida's number one industry and source of public and private revenue. In the years since, that domination has continued to increase and accelerate. Last year, the state set an all-time visitor record of 113 million people. That despite such negative things as the Zika outbreak and the Pulse nightclub mass shooting in Orlando. But Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran has not been a big fan of Visit Florida, the public-private partnership that markets the state as a visitor destination. At the beginning of this year's session, the speaker proposed the agency be abolished. He later scaled that back to a severe shrinking. Governor Rick Scott is pushing back against that House plan that would drastically cut one of his signature agencies, Visit Florida, and industry officials say cutting that agency is a bad move for an industry that makes up about a third of the state's economy. Lynn Hatter spoke with the U.S. Travel Association's Michael Jacobson about the latest in the fight between Scott and the House over the future of Visit Florida.
The U.S. Travel Association is launching this Faces of Travel effort to kind of stop this proposal here in Florida. Tell me a little bit about that campaign.
The Faces of Travel campaign is something that U.S. Travel did on the national scale back in 2009, and it was in response to when President Obama came out and attacked the meetings industry. And similar to what we did back then, we're doing the same now and localizing it in Florida. We're trying to get video testimonials and written testimonials from the frontline employees that will really be impacted by these poor government decisions. So the cooks, the housekeepers, the front desk staff, the people that will be the first to suffer if there is a drop in tourism in the state of Florida. So what we're asking is people to visit floridafacesoftravel.com. to not only submit their own testimonial of why tourism is important to their livelihood, but also to see what other people are saying throughout the state. And our ultimate goal is to package these and send these directly to their lawmakers to humanize the issue and show that these are the real men and women in the state of Florida that are really being affected by the government.
You know, you said something, noting that President Obama sort of went after the meetings industry back in 2009. Is this sort of thing cyclical? Do you see this kind of come up at various stages, and what drives it?
I think the biggest thing that drives it is the lack of respect, or more importantly, the lack of understanding for tourism. Obviously, we're the biggest industry here in Florida, but we're one of the biggest industries in the country, and yet we're not considered that by a lot of lawmakers. We're not top of mind for them. So it's a lot of the times the damage that's done to our industry isn't even necessarily intentional. When you talk to President Obama, he didn't realize what he was doing when he was making those comments and who he was hurting. And then if you look at the president, former president, then he became one of the biggest tourism champions we've ever had in the White House. So even if someone mistakenly makes comments that inadvertently affects the industry, doesn't mean they're necessarily against tourism. And that's something that we're using these video testimonials to try to make us top of mind for lawmakers.
One of the reasons Visit Florida got in trouble in the first place was its $1 million contract with Pitbull and the fact that they kept it secret. How common is this? And, you know, what is the U.S. Travel Association's stance on transparency and contracting?
I think when you look at the travel industry, U.S. Travel Association and its member organizations, transparency and accountability are of the utmost concern for us. We're fully supportive of transparency and accountability. When you look at Ken Lawson, the new CEO of Visit Florida, he's 2 months into the job, but 2 days into the job, he put in place all kinds of new transparency and accountability measures that address a lot of the concerns that have been brought up and leveled during this debate. So I think he's done a great job already. Obviously, there's more work to be done, and I think he's up for the challenge and he's willing to make those reforms. But when you look at the bill that just passed the House, HB 9, they disguised a lot of the measures contained in that bill as, quote, transparency measures. But what they really do is they paralyze Visit Florida and they put them in really handcuffs so that Visit Florida won't be able to do their job effectively and won't be able to do their job well. And essentially, the reforms that are put in place there would kill Visit Florida. So I think they're being guised as transparency and accountability, but really they're so excessive that Visit Florida would just be put in a position to fail naturally.
Be specific. Give me an example of a provision that you guys think is really problematic with respect to HB 9.
Sure. The first one is there's a provision that says that any contract over $750,000 has to be approved by the Senate. And frankly, if you're in the tourism marketing or frankly in the marketing field, you know that a lot of the ad buys and contracts that we work with are over $750,000. So when you look at something like that, it just adds a lot more red tape, bureaucratic approval, and it really just expands the role of government in a field that they don't necessarily need to be concerned about. Another one is that all out-of-state and international travel by Visit Florida employees would have to be approved and reviewed by the governor. And when you look at a state tourism office, their job is to be on the road selling the state of Florida and getting travelers to come to the United States. There's trade shows, there's marketing missions, there's meetings with travel media in key media markets throughout the U.S. Those are the opportunities that you have to welcome more travelers and build the visibility of Visit Florida, and particularly those smaller cities that are less known to these big markets, and to have every out-of-state or international trip by any staff approved by the governor is just, it's not realistic.
Legislation filed at the state capitol would set a perimeter around Florida schools and increase punishment for those carrying or using weapons within those restricted areas. Under the measure, anyone wielding a knife or a gun in a careless or threatening way within 1,000 feet of school property could be charged with a second-degree felony. The bill also would increase penalties for the improper storage of guns in the home when minors are present. The bill is one of several gun control measures filed by Democratic lawmakers for the 2017 session. So far, none have gained traction in the Republican-controlled legislature. The measure has yet to be heard by any legislative committee. Still to come on Capitol Report, our Friday Reporters Roundtable talks about several vital issues, such as how much money lawmakers will have to spend as they start crafting a state budget.
We heard from the Revenue Estimating Conference. This is a panel of various economists who talk about how much money the state could have in its coffers.
And a tragic shooting in South Florida prompts a bill ensuring law enforcement agencies learn to recognize the characteristics of autism.
This bill is not pointing fingers or blame at law enforcement. This is strictly to give them more tools in their toolbox.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Looking ahead to next week, city officials from across the state will be gathering in Tallahassee to discuss the latest issues and developments affecting municipalities and how they're being addressed in the Capitol during the current legislative session. These issues are all part of the Florida League of Cities 2017 legislative agenda, with numerous bills filed this session that attempt to limit or outright eliminate cities' local decision-making authority. The preservation of local control remains a top priority for Florida cities. Many of the League's 2017 priority issues are directly related to local self-government, including public records reform, regulation of wireless communication infrastructure, and short-term rentals, along with economic development through community redevelopment agencies, also known as CRAs, and promoting a sustainable Florida. Nearly 200 city officials, including 48 mayors, are expected to take part in Florida League of Cities 2017 Legislative Action Days, which begin on Tuesday of next week. Our reporters' roundtable now on Capitol Report, which is becoming a traditional Friday feature of this program, particularly on a day like this Friday when the legislature decides it's not going to hold any meetings whatsoever because it's St. Paddy's Day. And, of course, lawmakers need to be back in their home districts. There's plenty of green beer to be drunk and plenty of constituents to talk to at the same time. So we understand why they're out of town, but we are here on Capitol Report, particularly our own Sarah Mueller. Now, you were dealing with a major issue which is of interest not just to folks in Florida but across the country. This is Medicaid, but specifically for Florida. Where are we in that discussion, Sarah?
Well, Florida could see less state and federal dollars going to Medicaid services next year. Florida hospitals, they're opposing the Medicaid cuts that Governor Rick Scott is proposing, and they held a press conference this week.
There's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to come on the federal level in terms of Medicaid proposals related to the replacement of the Affordable Care Act. So certainly, as we're contemplating cuts this year, we want to take into account what impact that might have on future determinations in terms of Florida's fair share of Medicaid funding compared to the other states in the country.
So Scott's suggesting $1 billion in Medicaid cuts, and the federal government is also considering block granting Medicaid money. So both of that would mean less help for the poor.
It also means some major impacts, though, on the entire state budget, since this is the number one line item in the entire state of Florida budget. We don't know how that's going to go until we have some hard numbers to play with. Nick Evans, you were on top of that today.
Well, you're certainly right about the budget and the role that Medicaid and just healthcare in general plays. This week, the House had their budget exercise where they looked at, you know, potential cuts. When you look at the things that they're considering, it could be up in the, you know, $500 million just right off the top before they even really get down to the nitty-gritty. But this week, we heard from the Revenue Estimating Conference. This is a panel of various economists who talk about how much money the state could have in its coffers. Now, based on the meeting today, they're going to add probably about $100 million or so more than they thought they would, which is good, but it doesn't necessarily change the overall picture.
It's not enough to change any of their plans or to make something completely different than what they were thinking of originally. It's good. It's positive. They didn't lose anything. They picked up a little bit, but it's not going to change anybody's big picture plan.
That's Amy Baker. She leads the Office of Economic and Demographic Research. And to give you a sense of what happened today, it actually stacks on top of a improvement that the state got last December. But even so, we're talking about a couple $100 million in an $82 billion budget. For instance, the tax cut proposal Governor Scott has put out there, sales tax holidays, he has a handful altogether, be $98 million. That would eat up most of the additional money we've found. Sales tax on textbooks, that would cost $50 million. That would eat up a good chunk of it. And the big ticket tax cut that he wants, $454 million for the commercial lease tax, doesn't come close. So the other thing to consider with this is it's going to be a non-recurring addition. So it's like a bonus rather than a raise.
Okay. And any of the lawmakers who were looking at a big increase in state revenues to help fund their local projects are likely out of luck here.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Some history being made this year. Jim Ash, if we can throw the ball to you here for just a moment. Something called a Constitution Revision Commission now getting set to hold its first conclave. What's up with that?
Well, the Constitution Revision Commission meets every 20 years, and they have the unique ability to put measures directly on the ballot. So they're going to be watched very closely. This year, it's pretty clear that Richard Corcoran, the House Speaker, wants to impose judicial term limits. If he can't get that through the legislature, it's likely some of his appointees will try and propose it at the commission. But, you know, he's not the only one who gets to appoint members. And Chief Supreme Court Justice George LaBarga named his three appointments a month ago.
About that, yeah.
About a month ago. And when he did so, it seemed as though he was anticipating this, although, you know, justices aren't allowed to discuss issues that might come before the court. However, Justice LaBarga was asked about that, and here's his interesting response.
I'm old enough to remember the billboards that said impeach Warren. You know, the relationship between judiciary and the other two branches has not always been smooth. So this is nothing new. And I suspect that throughout our history, we will continue to have disagreements.
Of course, Justice LaBarga is at a disadvantage here, like the court is most of the time. They don't control their own budget, and he only had three picks to the commission compared with the nine that the House Speaker and the Senate President get to make.
So these folks will be deliberating for how long and what happens after they finish their deliberations?
Generally, it's about a year when they're done deliberating. They'll have measures that will go directly on next year's ballot.
So they don't have to go through the legislature or anybody else. That goes right up before the voters, and we'll see what happens.
No Supreme Court review like other measures.
A lot of things going on as we wind up this second week of the Florida legislative session. Get ready for week three. Jim Ash, Nick Evans, and Sarah Mueller. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As Florida lawmakers look at eliminating controversial regulations on building hospitals, a judge has sided with the HCA healthcare chain in an industry battle about adding a hospital in Miami-Dade County. Administrative law judge Robert Cohen, in an 80-page decision this week, said an HCA affiliate should receive what's known as a certificate of need to build the 80-bed Doral Medical Center. At the same time, Cohen recommended rejecting a certificate of need for a competing hospital that would be part of the Jackson Health System. Cohen came to the opposite conclusion of the State Agency for Healthcare Administration, which in December of 2015 gave preliminary approval to the 100-bed Jackson Hospital West project and turned down Doral Medical Center. Adding to the battle, hospitals in the Tenet Healthcare System and Nicholas Children's Hospital opposed both proposals. Under administrative law, Cohen's recommended order will go back to the Agency for Healthcare Administration for a final decision. Say the word pipeline, and many folks will immediately think of something like the Keystone XL pipeline or the Dakota Access Pipeline, both way out west. But Florida is also ground zero for a major pipeline project. A 515-mile-long pipeline is being placed through northern and central Florida. When it's completed, it will supply natural gas from the nation's northern and midwestern states to power plants throughout the Sunshine State. From member station WUSF in Tampa, Steve Newborn takes a look at how some of the pipeline's neighbors are fired up over the project.
You have to try really hard to reach Robin Kuhn's trailer. It takes a drive down a mile-long dirt road with sand ruts that test any four-wheel drive. Once inside, you're greeted with an upside-down American flag at half-staff. Kuhn, a soft-spoken Navy veteran with a brush mustache, drives a school bus weekdays. He moved to this remote homestead in rural Levy County to get a bit of quiet. But it's not so quiet anymore. A stone's throw from his trailer, truck after truck rumbles over a wooden boardwalk set in the marshland, cutting down trees and hauling them away. The noise is the least of his concerns. Once the trees are cut and the trucks are gone, the Sable Palm Pipeline will be here forever, just 3 feet from his property line.
Okay, if it leaks, I don't think I have too much to worry about.
That, he says, is because the pipeline is within spitting distance of a high-tension power line.
Static coming off the line.
Yeah,
I'm definitely in the incineration zone, is what they told me. Well, if it blows up, you don't have anything to worry about because you're gone.
They told you that?
Yes.
And what was your reaction to that?
Thank you very damn much.
This is just one small section of a 515-mile pipeline stretching through Alabama, southern Georgia, and north-central Florida. Construction is set to end in May at a power plant near the Polk-Osceola County line. The pipeline is now cutting a swath through this chunk of the Nature Coast, underlain with springs, sinkholes, and major rivers such as the Suwannee, Santa Fe, and Withlacoochee. Some environmentalists say this geology could collapse sections of the pipe, possibly causing a gas leak.
We've got interstate transmission pipelines that have operated in karst-sensitive areas all over the place. I couldn't find a significant karst-related incident in Florida at all.
That's Nicholas Albergo, an environmental engineering professor at the University of South Florida. Officials with Sable Trail Transmission did not respond to repeated requests for comment. Last year, the $3 billion project got the approval of both state and federal regulators. Officials from both agencies declined to comment on air. If a gas leak were to happen, Albergo says it should be shut down quickly.
They have automatic shutoffs. They've got an automatic system that alerts their baselines of an issue. So although I appreciate the possibility that there could be a leak, with that kind of data acquisition system that's measuring pipe flow and pressure amongst multiple spots along the pipeline, it won't be there for very long.
Still, that's of little comfort for people like Kuhn.
I said, because the property's not for sale. I got family's ashes out there. They knew it from the very beginning. And later on, they stated to me that they never knew about it. They never knew I had family's ashes out here. So I'm going, well, that's kind of ridiculous.
Kuhn has five family members whose remains are scattered directly in the path of the pipeline. He points to ground that's sacred to his family.
My dad, he was the first ashes I spread out here. He fought in Korea. After that, it was my brother-in-law, and that's where they took 10 feet of his. Then my brother, he's retired Air Force, served over in the Persian Gulf, and my stepson, and they ran through about five feet of his ashes.
When Sable Palm wanted to give him $1,400 to buy his family's burial ground, he tossed the offer in the trash. That's a lot of money for a school bus driver. It didn't matter anyway. The pipeline company took the land through eminent domain. I'm Steve Newborn in Tampa.
After plummeting contributions and controversy about how money was used, a House panel this week unanimously gave the go-ahead to a bill that would do away with a decades-old state employees' charitable campaign. The House Government Accountability Committee backed the proposal, which was filed by Jacksonville Republican Representative Clay Yarbrough. He said employees can give directly to charitable contributions and causes. Contributions had dropped from a peak of nearly $5 million back in 2005 to just $282,000 last year. The program, which has involved payroll deductions, became embroiled in controversy in recent years because of a contract with a private fiscal agent and questions about whether excessive amounts of money were going to the firm. The State Department of Management Services suspended the program late last year and ended the contract with the firm, Solex, by mutual agreement. The Tallahassee Democrat had reported that back in December. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a bill requiring autism awareness training for law enforcement officers is now heading to the House floor, and we get more on that story from Sasha Cordner.
Violet Gonzalez is the Director of Community Relations for MACTown, an agency which has been serving people with developmental and intellectual disabilities for more than 54 years.
And we were the agency that experienced that tragedy this summer where our employee was shot. taking care of one of the people that we serve.
She is referring to last year's high-profile incident that earned national attention. A North Miami police officer shot caregiver Charles Kinsey while his hands were raised and he was lying on the ground. The officer later said he was aiming at Kinsey's autistic patient who had a toy truck in his hand, though police insisted the officer thought the toy was a gun. And an emotional Gonzalez says that's why she supports a bill by Dania Beach Representative Evan Jenny to add autism training to law enforcement agencies' curriculum. Still, she says she wishes it could be expanded to include other trainings.
The people that we serve are very important to me. And I was talking to law enforcement, and they're willing to work and move forward. I'd like to see developmental disabilities be considered to be put on this bill, because those are the people that we serve. We serve people with autism and, of course, under developmental and intellectual disabilities.
For now, Jenny's bill will require the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to develop continued employment training related to autism,
which must now include how to recognize the symptoms and characteristics of an individual on the autism spectrum and appropriate responses to an individual with these characteristics. The training can count towards the 40 hours mandated for continued employment or appointment as a law enforcement officer. Approximately 1 in 68 children have been identified as falling within the autism spectrum disorder. Individuals are estimated to have up to 7 times more contact with law enforcement agencies during their lifetime than other individuals.
And Jenny adds his bill has one specific goal.
This bill is not pointing fingers or blame at law enforcement. This is strictly to give them more tools in their toolbox so that they never have to experience what that law enforcement officer had to go with in the aftermath of that shooting at MacTown.
And as for law enforcement, Gary Bradford with the Florida Police Benevolent Association calls it a good bill.
Law enforcement in the state of Florida wholeheartedly supports this bill. It's needed. We've had a good sponsor. We've had a good give and take. And, you know, when situations arise and complexity of our society, as law enforcement officers, no matter what your employing agency is, we've got to step up to the plate and do the right thing.
The bill is expected to cost more than $10,000, but Jenny says it's absorbed within FDLE resources. Jenny adds he's also hoping to pursue other developmental disabilities in the future. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.